All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Tuesday, April 17th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
From you're wondering, is it a question or an answer?
We're
from
Daily. This is our fourth time recording, so I'm wondering if I am or not.
That's true. We've not had a good start to this so far. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com is a site. DFSR.com/MLB. It will get you that free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings MLB. NBA while the season still chugs along here through the playoffs, and then football when time comes around. So all covered under one subscription package, free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. Buddy, happy tax day. How are you spending the day today? Are you doing it willingly and hoping that the government keeps all your money, or are you celebrating in other ways? How do you usually spend the day where all taxes are due to the great nation of ours?
Well, I'm podcasting, and then I'm going out to Chili's with a friend. So it's a nice little tax day overall.
Chili's is the new golf course, so it makes sense that would be all the high-powered executives meet at Chili's.
We've had to cancel our Chili's meetup twice now based on bad weather, so as long as the weather cooperates today, we'll be in good shape.
It wasn't just because that other person was suggesting you go to Chili's, and that was the reason for that. Wasn't the reason for the cancellation?
How dare you!
All right, we got a Tuesday.
Make a better fajita. That's what I say, and then you can start talking trash. Go ahead.
We got a Tuesday in baseball here. Pretty interesting. The schedule is starting to round out where we're getting more evening games, which is nice. There is a 3 o'clock game because. In the first time that I can remember, a game was postponed. Well, we've had an epic run of postponements. So there's 5 games postponed on Sunday, which was 3 more than the most day I can remember where a game was postponed. And then yesterday, we get Toronto postponed because ice fell on the dome and like made a hole in it. And so I think Chris Durrell, one of our writers, or mostly our like main baseball writer, made a joke. He's like, oh, the Rogers Center needs a dome for its dome to protect it from falling ice. So that game got canceled. It's going to be made up at 3 o'clock today. That is on an all day slate. But then the 7 o'clock game, the doubleheader, the second part of that game, the second half of the doubleheader is not featured on the main slate for DraftKings and FanDuel. So just a note of that. And then we've getting these random 6:35 games in New York. Like, I'm not exactly sure what the reasoning is behind playing a game at 6:35 and not 7 when all the other games start. So the schedule a little weird, but for the most part, we're getting away from the weekday day baseball, thankfully, because I just like when all things kind of happen in the evening here. When you see the pitchers that are going today, we have Kluber, Otani, we'll talk about these guys, and then some other guys, McCullers, Corbin, Price, guys that all kind of fall into the category of really great near the top end to very good. And I would say there's like 6 or 7 of those guys going. You like these kind of slates? Do you think that the batting gets too concentrated to a couple teams? We've talked about this a little before about how we feel about when there just are elite arms on the slate. I have a specific feeling about it. I don't know when you first like just take your first initial glance in the morning at what we're looking at. Is this the kind of slate that you can kind of sink your teeth into, or do you worry that there's just too many good pitching options?
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, it's like a regular slate to me. I'd really like to have at least one really good pitching option. When there was more than that, I think it increases the variance a little bit. It makes it more difficult for bad players to make mistakes, because I think there's just something kind of visceral around when you're a casual or bad DFS player and you look and you see like 7 good pitching options at the top of a slate. And, you know, since it's default sorted by price, you can't help but see those guys. Then typically people will wind up with one of them. Like, there's something psychological about that. Whereas if it's just one guy, I feel like they feel more entitled to fade or, you know, try to squeeze in other bats or whatever. So on one hand, yeah, I do think it increases variance, but I also feel like I like DFS baseball best when I do have a good pitcher and I don't need to just leave it up to chance if my bad pitcher is the one who gets there or not.
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, I think the situation you're talking about happened on Sunday when you get Sale, Strasburg, Otani, and then Syndergaard. When all 4 of those guys are going, all in pretty plus matchups, that's going to be hard for that's going to be hard for the casual player to go wrong with those four guys going, right? Because like they all, you can make a case for all of them. Now Otani got sort of controversially postponed, even though there was no precipitation in the forecast. They postponed it just because of cold weather, like 20 minutes before game time. But otherwise, all 4 of those guys looked like they were in good spots, and the 3 of them pitched all things considered pretty well. This is not exactly the same situation, though. It's pretty clear to me that Kluber, I mean, when we're talking here about just elite arms, I'm wondering what we do. Okay, so let's talk mostly about Kluber and Otani here. So Kluber, we have a long track record on what we can expect from him. We can talk about some of his numbers here in a second. But what do we make of a guy like Otani? He's young. He's obviously taken sort of the baseball world by storm. He's been amazing. I mean, he's been like arguably just like the MVP at this point, just considering that he's winning games every 5 days and then hitting Right. On the days where he's not pitching. So when we look at his early season numbers, he's pitched 13 innings. He's averaging 6.5 innings per start, 12.5 Ks per nine, walking nobody. How much do we want to be really aggressive with this projection? I mean, do we want to just project him like in the Corey Kluber range of what we can expect from a starting pitcher? Because the early returns have been excellent, and there's obviously pedigree here. But if we're going to start going in the he's just among the elite arms in baseball, then we're going to have some really interesting questions about, because usually it's Corey Kluber or bust when it's a situation like this. I think Ohtani actually makes this really interesting, but I'm wondering how aggressive we should be with his projection going forward after the early season returns.
I don't think you can be very aggressive with him, particularly in the pitching realm. Like, you can be aggressive. Like, he's obviously good. For DFS, this become problematic, though, because the hype matter, it's like so different from season-long baseball where, like, you're trying to figure out who to trade him for or, you know, how to get him or whatever. But when it comes to DFS, like, the salary will just go up if he has one, you know, as he continues to have starts like this, the salary goes higher and higher. And I think, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I'd much rather take a known commodity like Kluber than in such a new one like Ohtani, because the thing is, Ohtani, like, there's no book on him, right? He's got 13 innings pitched here. He kind of came out of nowhere. He's also really young. Sometimes these guys from other countries, you know, they already pitched for 6 years, like, you know, Yu Darvish or Matsuzaka or some of these other, like, really hyped foreign imports. But with Ohtani, that's not exactly the case. And so given that he's been insane so far, like, I don't expect that he'll turn bad or anything like that. But really strange pitchers, nobody has any scouting on. Baseball is just hard enough in general, and sample sizes are small enough here that I think that we can, you know, I'm personally tempering my enthusiasm a little bit, which I know is not what everyone wants to hear, but yeah, that's kind of my overall feeling on it.
Yeah, I don't compare him specifically to those guys only because he has come over in terms of track record. Clearly, he's pitched less overseas. He was just such an insanely hyped commodity coming over, though. It wasn't like completely out of nowhere. It's weird when you look at it. He's not going to strike out 12.5 batters per nine. I think that's pretty clear going forward. So I think that the strikeouts are probably going to trend down. Now, I guess the question we're asking ourselves is, where do they trend down to? They're not going to go up at this point. So do they trend down to 10 per nine? Because the reason, sure, I ask is, like, if they trend on a 10 per 9 or 11 per 9, it's a pretty big difference. Like, there's a pretty big difference between just those, that another strikeout per 9, just in terms of overall projections. And I think we can probably also agree that he's just not going to pitch 6.5 innings. And the question there becomes, so we're really, this is the hardest part, is when you don't have track records and we don't have large sample sizes on guys, is that you can say, we can confidently say, yes, it's going to come down. But the question is, where is the mean weighted performance going to land? And I think that's going to be the tricky thing. And it might, honestly, for our projection system, this might be one of those situations where it kind of just changes as the season goes along, because it's going to be tough to trust. It's going to be tough to trust the early thing. It's going to be tough to trust the most recent performance. And I think we really avoid using current season stats to influence projections, because baseball just doesn't really and shouldn't work that way in terms of projection systems. And Ohtani, would you agree that Ohtani might be a guy that we might make an exception on for that because of just like the nature of who he is?
Yeah, you want to make some exception. And again, like, translating overseas data is a lot more difficult even than translating minor league data in terms of future projections. But so I guess when I look at a guy like Ohtani, or I look at it, someone who's breaking out where the track record doesn't suggest that they should be performing at that level. And I think we can all agree again that he's probably not a true talent 1200 OPS guy and a true talent, 13 Ks per nine guy at the age of 23, having never played against major league competition. So I'm pretty confident in saying that. And in that case, for DFS purposes, the hype will almost always exceed the future expectation, right? Yes. Like, the price is going to go up. The ownership is going to be high. That's going to become positive feedback loop and raise the algorithm. And unless Ohtani really is like, you know, like my buddy Brian Hayesy in high school, who could also was our best pitcher and played shortstop and had a 1400 OPS. And you're like, unless he can do that against major league competition, which no one in human history has ever done before, then, you know, I just don't foresee that being the case. But, you know, sometimes you get burned. Sometimes the guy is as good as the hype suggests. Even with guys like Aaron Judge or somebody, right? Like, sometimes someone comes up and it looks like they're running hot, and then they sustain the performance, and then you're left holding the bag while everyone else, you know, kind of ate at the hype train. But it's like an old Warren Buffett quote of being fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful. That really applies to baseball more than other sports. And I see a lot of people being greedy on Ohtani right now.
And I think one thing, I was talking to my buddy the other day, and I think we can agree on one thing, that's this, and I can't remember if we talk about this in the podcast, and then we'll move on from Ohtani, but is that you are going to see I do think you're going to start seeing a fundamental shift in player evaluation, and you're just going to see more of these guys. I think like this opened the door to, oh, you have a guy that can do it. He can play both things. And like you said, the best player in your high school team was the best hitter and the best pitcher. That's the case with almost all these guys, right? Like they were just the best athlete on their team. And it doesn't, if they're going to be, if they were insane at hitting and insane at pitching, a guy like Ohtani is probably going to usher in a new, not like it's going to happen for everyone, but it's going to usher in a new kind of player that is just going to play both. And I think you're going to see this guys that start to believe, you know, the 4 minute, someone broke the 4 minute mile. We just saw that it could be done now. And like now we're just going to see a new class of players that are going to want to do both and just play every day. One thing that kind of digs into his projection today is he does face the Red Sox. This is not a great matchup. He gets them at home in a nice money line with -156, but it's not a great matchup. If you had to choose right now between Ohtani and Kluber, at least for FanDuel, I think I'm fine rostering them together. Ohtani's still not very expensive on DraftKings. He's only 10-9, and I think that's fine considering some of the downgrades you get other places. But in terms of FanDuel, is it kind of just Kluber or bust for you here, just considering we know exactly what he is and maybe the matchup is just slightly better?
I'm definitely going to take Kluber over Ohtani for cash games. There's no question about it. I mean, at 10-5, a guy with two starts against a good offense, like I'm just in the American League too. Like there's definitely enough factors where I don't need to think too hard about that for my cash games.
Yeah, and Kluber's just such an insane innings beast. Like this guy is just kind of
yeah, he's seven, good at everything.
it's not fair to compare Ohtani to him here. And I think that whenever we get a guy like Kluber right around a -200 favorite against a Twins team that does strike out, especially toward the bottom of their lineup, a decent amount, I think that he makes for a pretty clear cash play. I said I don't have a problem with stacking them together on DraftKings. Other pitchers that maybe stand out to you, anyone else that stands out to you on this slate? There are a couple other good arms. Because the upper tier of those guys, specifically Kluber, are pretty expensive, and price is actually over $10,000. I don't think I want to go there with him against the Angels here. There are some other cheaper DraftKings pitchers here. We get Alex Wood at 8,200, which is interesting. Junior Guerra at 5,400. Guerra's had his issues, but that's
very cheap price. Yeah, he's got huge K upside, sure.
Right. Anyone else stand out to you? I personally, right now, if I were going to do it, I would stack Kluber and Ohtani. But if we were to pivot one of those two guys, any of those guys stand out to you as potentially a nice payoff in their price range?
No, I think both of those guys are pretty good options. I also like Zach Wheeler. I think Wheeler, you know, he's a guy, people have short memories in baseball, and pitchers more than any other position in any sport really are prone to off years just because one little injury thing early in the season can, you know, really send a guy haywire. But Wheeler was a really legit prospect, and he is not priced like one right now. Like he's 7,300 on FanDuel, 7,700 on DraftKings. Fits perfectly into that pitcher two slot. And, you know, it's only one start, but he looked excellent against, again, the Marlins. But 7Ks against one walk in one inning, just still two hits allowed. Like, I think Wheeler's a very interesting guy. Like, he kind of checks all the boxes for me in terms of that pitcher two slot, where it's like the K upside is there, the price is cheap. It's not an exceptional matchup. So maybe, I don't know, maybe that moves him more into the big tournament territory. But I think he's a guy that I'm certainly going to take a hard look at tonight.
Yeah, Wheeler, you're right. He was like the prize piece in, I think, when they traded Beltran, like way back. Like this is like 5 years ago or whatever. Right. And he's had injury issues, but he's mostly his problem at the major league level and even the minors has been the walks. Now, it was only one game and it's easy to not walk Marlins because you can kind of just groove pitches there. But you're right. I like when we talk about guys that have pedigree at some point that have fallen off the radar because, like you said, the injuries have been there. When he just hasn't been able to sustain a long-term performance.
Yeah, the guy's 27 years old, and he had one bad year, basically. And, like, he could have been worse. Like, he had an 8.5 Ks per nine. Like, and the prior year, he went 9 Ks per nine and a 3.5X. But he's a good pitcher.
I do like the price on Alex Wood. He is a nice favorite here against – he's a -190 against the Padres. He's a guy that I can make a case to pivot away from one of those – not Kluber, but if I was a little bit more bearish on Ohtani, I would say pivoting to Wood here is not a problem. You know, the problem we've always talked about with Wood in the past is just the pitch count. He struggled to get the pitch count up on over 90 last year. That's been sort of an organizational philosophy still for the Dodgers. They're still not pushing their starters. And yet, in the first, he's gone nearly six innings per start in his first three games, mostly because the guy, he doesn't walk anybody. He's zero walks this year. That's not
literally gonna, hasn't walked anywhere.
Right. That's not going to sustain. K's are down a little bit, but people might look at that ERA. I think the ERA might be driving why his price is so low, because usually when we see a pitcher like him who's decent against the Padres team, which I think the algorithms do price for, or they make some guesses about like what the money lines are going to be, people might look at that 5 ERA and think that there's something wrong with him. There really isn't. He just has struggled with some left on base. He's left no one on base this year. Like, his left on base percentage is, oh no, excuse me, the 32%. Excuse me, that's low. I'm not sure. Actually, it's a little weird to figure out why his ERA is so high. Do you think the matchup for him and the price could dictate a pivot there? Or is it just maybe, or you, I'm still also just a little bit worried about pitch counts here.
No, I really like Wood, actually. I think this early in the season, the guy's pitched 17 innings. Nothing really needs to happen in terms of just running bad. Like, allowing five earned runs, it could be as easy as just getting a clustering effect around a few innings here and there of seeing eye singles and stuff like that. Home run at the wrong time. Like, there's just any number of things that can go badly. BABIP, obviously, batting average on balls in play. So, yeah, I wouldn't read too deeply into that. I think here we're going to go track record, which is excellent. The walks have been decreasing each year. The strikeouts have been going up. Phenomenal pitcher's park in San Diego and a terrible offense. So I think for that reason, like, he seems like an even safer pitcher two option than Wheeler, who doesn't have the same benefit of the money line and is up against a considerably better offense.
I take it back. I was misreading the lump. Like, it crossed up in my mind about left on base percentage. He's been awful in left on base. Like, he's only kept 30% of the base runners from scoring, which is a crazy outlier.
Wildly unlucky. Yeah. Right. It's usually, like, what, like 70% or
right. His career number is 75%, and you're right. You usually settle in. A decent pitcher will usually settle in to right around that 70 to 75% range. So if he's worse by half, I think we can assume, and most of it was from one game. It was the last game against Oakland where he couldn't
allow
seven hits and seven. So if you allow seven hits and seven runs and no walks, right? Like, you can just, it pretty much tells a story of what happened. It was like everyone got on base and then someone hit a home run. And that's kind of, that's exactly sort of what happened to him here. I have no problem pivoting here. Anyone else we sort of missed here before we move on to hitters? Other good arms, Corbin and Gio. You mentioned Wheeler. Pivetta has started the season sort of nicely. Anyone else stand out to you here in the starting pitcher realm?
No, I think we've done a pretty good job in terms of just the overall, that pitcher two slot. I think that leaves people with a good number of options.
All right, before we get into some of the stacks and hitters that we can take a look at here, hit us up with a sponsor.
Sure, let's talk about NoHalftime.com. NoHalftime is a great place to go to do one-on-one daily fantasy sports challenges without having to put in a ton of time trying to make the money work in a salary cap game format. So the way it works is you can either go into their app and see challenges that other people have issued. So they might issue something like Zach Wheeler versus Alex Wood, who's going to score more fantasy points. You'll see them sorted by the amount of dollars that people have put in as well. You can choose to accept someone's challenges or just keep scrolling. It's as simple as that. You can also make your own challenges. You know, if you have a guy that you think is a little bit under the radar tonight, you can issue a challenge of him versus some overhyped player. You might be able to get something like Kluber versus Otani accepted. Who knows? But if not, no big deal. You just get your money back. Really is a nice way to play daily fantasy sports and really capitalize on probably the biggest edges in the entire game. So check them out, NoHalftime.com. Use promo code DFSR. You can get a 50% bonus up to $50 on your first deposit.
That's a great example, actually, because I think actually you could get that. You know, we talked about the hype train.
It's not out of the question.
And early season returns on guys. That that Otani versus Kluber one will almost, I'm going to put that in just to see if it will be accepted. I think that actually will be accepted because, and I think that you're getting the better side of that with Kluber every single time. And because that's a great, it's just a great chance to take advantage of like the people just seeing a name and just saying, oh my God, this guy's insane. So I'm going to put that one in and see if it'll be accepted. And I think you're right. I think it will be. It's a day ending in Y, so our system wants to play Brewers. I'm just not exactly sure. Like, some days it seems correct. I was like talking to Chris about this last night, but of all teams, I don't know if it's just a sample size thing or it's just stuck in my mind, but at times I think our system does come out high on certain teams. I'm not sure if it's just relative to price, or I just feel like I see certain teams more than others. And sometimes, most times correctly, and other times it makes me stop and wonder. This is another day where our system's calling out a ton of Brewers guys in a matchup against the Reds. One, do you find that that's the case sometimes with, like, you know, we see this in all of our systems, right? So we make the joke, it's like, oh, it's, you know, I'm trying to think of who we were like this with football. Football, we had certain guys like this, and basketball, we have certain guys. There's just certain, if we have certain expectations, the projections are there. Brewers seem like this the case to me. I'm wondering, A, do you find that to be the same for you when you kind of look at our projections? And B, is this a night where it is possibly correct to just stack this team that I feel like I played more than any other team since the beginning of the year?
Yeah, well, this is going to be a natural phenomenon. Again, I mentioned this earlier in the season, but especially in baseball where it's not hard to run bad. And when you run bad, your price goes down. But in baseball, unlike other sports, like say a running back is just getting 11 carries a week in football. Like that's a good reason why his performance is going down. There's rarely a good reason why after, you know, 15 games or whatever that a player in baseball is worse than he was the prior year, right? And so for that reason, like, our system is going to be like, no, we're going to stick with this Brewers thing. Like, we really think it's going to turn around. And often it does, you know, and it can be painful if you continue to come up on the wrong side of that coin flip. And that's what winds up annoying people. And there are just going to be teams that there's inevitably going to be some team that ran bad that is going to run bad for a little while longer, right? And so right. If the Brewers are that team right now, then that's kind of how it works out. Now, there are some troubling signs about the Brewers. The 27% K rate against righties is not very reassuring or anything like that. You know, you can just argue age against some guys like Ryan Braun. But I think there's plenty of positive signs as well. And I think the most positive sign for tonight is just the opposing pitcher. Sal Romano, he's been some kind of bad this year. 4 Ks per 9, 5.5 walks per 9, 1.7 home runs per 9. This guy has been stone cold terrible, one of the very worst pitchers in all of Major League Baseball to have made 3 starts so far. And I think that's really the big thing that both our system and the Vegas money line is suggesting here. They have one of the highest implied totals on the day, in spite of being 19th overall versus opposing right-handed pitching. So taking all that together, I think that's basically what our system is seeing here.
Yeah, you know, I can go through the seasons of guys and teams that we've gone not entire seasons on like this, but, you know, 2 years ago we had basically a motto. It was Go Tigers, because we were just high, and Tigers had just trended down to the bottom of pricing, at least on FanDuel, and it was like Miggy, V-Mart, Castellanos, guys like this.
It's Martinez, right?
Yeah, right. So you're just playing them every night. Last year, it was a lot of Blue Jays this happened with. Blue Jays ran very bad in BABIP for a long time and really struggled. Now they were a righty-heavy lineup, but they just kind of, you know, we caught them for maybe – sometimes you can catch teams for multiple weeks where it just seems like it's happening. And then like the list of players where we've been through this is endless. And most times, you're right, is we can point to – bad luck. Like, I was having this conversation. I know we're going to talk about other guys today, but I was having this conversation with some people in chat the other day. And by the way, members only chat is available in your subscription as well. It was about Ryan Zimmerman. And it was like, you know, day 4 of rostering Ryan Zimmerman against the lefty.
Yep.
And it was, if you look back at his track record, this guy just absolutely crushes lefties. And it was just another day where he went like 0-for-4 and just didn't pay off his minimum FanDuel price, which is completely insane, hitting cleanup, you know, in his best split on like a prolific offense.
Yeah, totally.
And it just happens. And if you look at, and I looked, and sometimes I'll take hard looks at what the guy's numbers are. Like for instance, like Chris Davis, is grounding out at a troubling rate. That number normalizes quick. And that actually could be a sign that things are not going great for him, right? Like if you're just grounding out all the time, that's not good. But if a guy like Zimmerman, hard contact rate up, walks up, K's down, one number, BABIP. Like he just wasn't getting the ball. He just wasn't getting the ball to kind of settle down into the field. So I think it makes sense to have a steady hand here. I'm still very much in line with the Brewers. It would not matter to me if the Brewers got shut out again by Sal Romano. If the system saw them as having a good matchup again tomorrow, I'd be fine doing it. This is the kind of thing you have to be able to do in baseball, or else. And you have to just be willing to just manage your frustration around it. So anyway, lots of examples every year. This is just the thing that kind of happens. And time again, things do reverse course back to what typically they're projected to be, or what a player's historical numbers will tell you about them. Other teams that you're kind of taking a look at here in terms of offense, I'm with you that we're on the Brewers. I don't think that's going to change. But are there other teams on a night with a bunch of good pitchers, are there teams that are standing out to you that we maybe have some higher expectation on?
Right, so another team I'm trying to target tonight is the Tampa Bay Rays. I mean, they're generally speaking not a prolific offense or anything, but I just love the matchup here against Matt Moore, former teammate, by the way. So a revenge game for the Rays against Matt Moore. Did the revenge game work the other way? That's what I always wonder about revenge games, because the guy's mad. He got spurned by this team. In a lot of cases, shouldn't they just like hate his guts too, and like also just want to go just like prove that they didn't need him or something? So
this is the great thing about revenge games. There's lots of little rules to them, right? There's lots of little rules, and it takes like a discerning eye and like just like a real nuanced look at baseball and all other sports to be able to figure out when exactly the revenge game makes
when it
sense.
Applies.
Exactly.
Well, I'm taking the Rays in a revenge game against Matt Moore tonight, Doug. And the reason for that mostly, though, is just because Matt Moore is horrendous. The last 3 years, I have not been kind to Matt Moore. He's just getting worse and worse. Another one of these guys that came up as a huge prospect for the Rays and just never really pulled it all together. And the big thing for him has always been the control. He had control issues coming up. People thought that the good stuff could help him get that by. Slowly, he realized he can't just walk 4.5 guys per 9. But as he started putting more balls around the zone, he stopped striking people out. And this season is no different. Through 3 starts, he's only made it through 12 innings, 6.5 Ks per 9, but 5.1 walks per 9. The guy is just a butcher out there. And the Rays feature plenty of right-handed bats that should be able to take advantage of this. It's one of the higher implied totals that you'll see for the Rays. Oh, I guess there's no line on it right now because the pitcher got moved around. There was a higher implied total on it last night when I looked at it. But right now, yeah, I think you could, it's tough to go too wrong stacking against Matt Moore if you have right-handed batters.
Yeah, they have a couple righties in the middle of the lineup that can do some damage here. Gomez, Cron can hits lefties well. Wilson Ramos. Yep. I think you're going to see a shakeup at the top of the lineup. Matt Duffy hit leadoff yesterday, but then left the game early, came a blame at third base, and I think you're going to probably see a new leadoff hitter. And the reason I mention that is because that's just a good spot for somebody. Like, whenever we can move a new, probably underpriced guy into the leadoff spot in a plus matchup, that's usually the exact kind of situation we're looking for in terms of value, and especially on a night where you're likely going to pay up for one or two pitchers. So we'll keep an eye out for what the if Duffy plays, he's a good play too. A little bit expensive. He's not that great of a hitter, but after a guy leaves a game early, like with a leg issue, typically that means to me like he's not going to play the next day. So we'll keep an eye out for what the Rays lineup is going to be. Yeah, after these guys, there are some other. Those are the teams that I was kind of taking a look at as well. There aren't, when we have this many good arms, it sometimes gets a little tricky to sort of figure out where some of the other value is. The A's get Miguel Gonzalez. Miguel Gonzalez,
yeah, I was looking
just
at
another
too.
One of these butchers on the mound, just guys that kind of just continue to hang around in the majors, even though it's a little tough to figure out exactly why. I'm wondering, actually, wonder what the record is for me stacking against Miguel Gonzalez. It doesn't work out every time, and I think that there's been times where it's like clearly not been, it just hasn't worked. And yet when I look at his career numbers, and especially the last couple seasons, I'm just wondering like how come it didn't work every time. Like last year, 5.65 xFIP, struck out less than 6 per 9, walked 3 guys per 9. This year, somehow getting worse. Like I'm not exactly sure, less than 4 strikeouts per 9, walking close to 4 guys. The ERA at least this time is up near 9, so not sure how much. Still, teams still look at ERA, so I'm not sure how much longer this guy's going to be able to kind of figure this out, although the White Sox just have so many bad pitchers that it's not like they're going to get a massive improvement somewhere else. The ballpark does not help the A's much, and their lineup, I mean, it's another one of these day ending in Y when the system wants to play Marcus Semien. This guy's like the Babe Ruth of our system. Like, just not a single day goes by. There's like, dude, come on, Marcus Semien. I don't care.
Value play.
The guy could be 5,000 at shortstop. This guy's just the absolute best ever, future Hall of Famer. doesn't matter the split. He's one of these ones I'm like,
lefty, like, righty, underhanded, Otani. Doesn't matter.
Batting ninth doesn't matter. Like, just let's play this guy. Come on. Now, Simeon's a guy that our system always like. I think mostly because it's one of these things where shortstop is just such a bad position that anytime you get shortstops like him, Seager, Correa, Trey Turner's another guy, it's going to overvalue the 5 or 6 shortstops that actually have a puncher's chance when it comes
to
offense.
What I was going to say, because immediately when it comes to shortstops, you're probably ruling out 80% of them just on the basis of batting 7th through 9th every night, right?
So exactly. Like, right.
Any shortstop who does anything, it's only really giving any credible look to 4 guys a night.
Right, exactly. And I think that's where you are. And so then you get, and then eventually, every once in a while, you get like a Segura or Freddie Galvis, guys like that hit second or whatever. But
exactly.
For the most part, I think that's where Semien comes in. He's had a run of decent matchups, and you're right, he just hits second, and very few other shortstops are able to hit this high in the order. But anyway, him, Joyce, Lowry hits third. He doesn't have much power, but getting to hit third in that lineup is pretty good. These guys are all a little bit priced up because they've been pretty good on offense. But again, Miguel Gonzalez is just such an epic bum that I think that we're fine. And then I'm the other team is the Dodgers. Have you looked at Brian Mitchell's numbers from this year?
No.
Okay, so Brian Mitchell has pitched 13 and 2/3 innings. He has struck out 2 batters per 9. So, and he has, so that's 2 okay. strikeouts. And then he's walked 9 batters per 9. So he's like, I'm going to go out there. Here's my plan. I'm going to walk at least a guy an inning.
I'm going to start the inning off by walking somebody. That's
then,
just
I'm not going to strike out. I'm going to hope for a double play. I'm hoping it doesn't get too out of control. Anyway, 13 2/3 innings. He probably regresses back to just being real bad instead of historically bad. So right now, he's on a historically bad run. He probably just settles in as just very bad. Dodgers bats against him look like they're in a good spot. Guy like the aforementioned Seager, still you can it's worth it to pay up for some of these shortstops. He's one of them.
Yeah, sure. Even in a bad park, yeah, you don't want to overrate it.
That's what I mean. Like the and the park's the only thing that's driving them down here. If this game was in anywhere in San Diego, their implied run line is well over 5. Right now, it's 4.7. So if it was just basically any other except for probably where the Dodgers play and in San Diego, anywhere else, they're going to be up and over 5. So I think they're worth to take a look at, even though their prices have come up a little. Anything else I missed today? I think we went a little bit over today in terms of time, but it seems like there was a lot to talk about. Any final thoughts before we get out of here?
Miguel Gonzalez gets paid $4.8 million per year to pitch at this level in the major leagues. That's just the last thing I want to leave you with. Just on your tax day, when you're shipping off your last couple thousand bucks to the government, just picture Miguel Gonzalez being terrible at his job and making $4.8 million a year.
That's true. At least Brian Mitchell only makes a half a mil. All right, dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, dfsr.com/MLB would get you that free 3-day trial. Go check that out. We'll be back again tomorrow talking more baseball. Buddy, enjoy your Tuesday.
Later.